So reading from Bhajan Rahasyam by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he's explaining that the inner meaning of the fourth shloka of Shikshastakam, how this shloka is meant to help us attain ruchi and nam bhajan, genuine realized taste for chanting the holy name of Krishna. Chaturta yam saran. So for devotees who are ajata rati sadhakas, ajata means not born, ajanma, and rati means bhav, those sadhakas who have not attained loving sentiments for the Lord or His holy name, then they should practice like this. And then those that are jata rati sadhakas, those that have attained, jata means janma, that rati or bhava, intense mood of attachment and affection for the Lord has arisen in their heart by the mercy of the Lord or His associates. For those devotees that are jata rati sadhakas, then they will chant the holy names of the Lord. And when they chant the fourth pair of holy names, that fourth pair of holy names will carry them into Madhyan Leela. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So when they chant Hare Hare, this is the fourth pair of holy names. And this fourth pair of holy names is full of ruchi. This is ruchi here. And this ruchi is the taste for meditating on the Madhyan Leela of the Lord. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that this Leela is contained in this pair of names. Because his premise, his experience, his secrets, his rahasyam, his secrets of bhajan, he's found that there are eight periods of Leela in Krishna's pastimes. There's Nishant Leela, and then Pratak Leela, Purvan Leela, Madhyan Leela, Apurvan Leela, Shayan Leela, Pradosh Leela, and then there's Nisha Leela. So in these eight different Leelas, these eight Leelas are found in the eight pairs of holy names. Hare Krishna, this is Nishant Leela. Then Hare Krishna, this is a Purva or Pratak Leela. Then Krishna Krishna, this is Purvan Leela. And Hare Hare, this is Radhakund Leela. Hare Hare. So that's, why is that? How is that? Where is that? This we have to find by our chanting this pair of names, studying these verses, and studying Nadana Najanam Sundaram minutely, and going through the process of elimination, which Lord Chaitanya is directing us step by step. Eliminate this, eliminate that, and then eliminate everything, then accept the positive proposal. So this verse, Nadanam Najanam Nasundaram, Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janamani Janmani Ishvare, Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahoitiki Twayi, has two halves. The first half is elimination, and the second half is acceptance. So we have to give up one thing to accept another thing. Because presently we have accepted something. We've accepted many things. Our cup is full. When your cup is full of water, you can't put anything else in it. For example, you may be sitting at the Sunday feast and you have a cup of water, and then someone comes by with sweet rice, and you think, oh, if he puts it on my plate, I will only get a little bit. But if I can empty out this cup of water, I can get a whole cup of sweet rice. So immediately you throw that cup of water somewhere and you fill your cup up with sweet rice. So eliminating the water gives you an opportunity to fill it up with sweet rice. So we have to eliminate our attachment to Dhanam Janam Sundaram and Kavitam Sundaram. And then we can accept the proposal of Bhavatad Bhaktir Ahoitakitvi. And then this is what Lord Chaitanya, first there has to be elimination, then acceptance. So we've been discussing the elimination side of the verse, what those words mean. We discussed Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaram, Kavitam. And then we just now will discuss this Jagadish. Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaram, Kavitam, Va, Jagadisha Kamaye. We also discussed Kamaye, desire. Desire is a function of the living entity. So now, what is Jagadish? Why does Lord Chaitanya use the word Jagadish? So, Jagadish means the Lord of the universe. Because he uses two words in this, and two names of God, two noms are used here in this verse, Jagadish and Ishvara. So there's some significance. So Jagadish means the Lord or the Master of this world, this Jagat. And what is this world? This is the world of Dhanam Janam Sundarim. This Lord, Narayan, or the Shiradakshay Vishnu, who is ruling this world, he's ruling the world externally and he's ruling the world internally. The microcosm within and the macrocosm without. So the microcosm is our body and all the star-like cells. The millions and billions of cells in our body are like the millions and millions of stars. And the different organs are like galaxies and planets. And Shiradakshay Vishnu is residing in the heart as the oversoul or the paramatma or supersoul. And he's supervising and controlling everything, sitting on the planet of our planet of the heart region. So then if you come outside in the macrocosm into the universe, you find so many cells, so many shining effulgent cells, which are known as stars and planets and galaxies. And Shiradakshay is also outside. And he's sitting on his own planet, just as he's sitting on the planet of the heart. He's sitting on Shiradakshay Loka. And then from there he's managing everything. So he's called this Lord of the Universe, this Master and Lord of the Universe is known as Jagadish, Jagat Isha. So in his universe, what's going on in his universe? There's lots of Dhanam going on. Lots of people in this universe, all from the heavenly planets, from the heavenly planets to the hellish planets, everyone's looking for wealth or women or men or position or elevation, or everyone's moving around, changing their seats and changing their flight patterns, changing their itinerary, flying from Tamagun to Rajagun and Rajagun to Sattvagun, and flying from the earth from Burloka to Bhuvaloka, and from Bhuvaloka to Swarloka, and Swarloka to Janaloka, and Janaloka to Maharloka, and Maharloka to Tapaloka, and Tapaloka to Satyaloka. Bhur Bhuva Swa. Jana, Mahara, Tapa, Satya. These seven planets. There are seven stopovers, seven different cities, seven city tour, seven planets. So, and on all those planets, there's various expressions of Dhanam, the Janam, the Sundarim are going on. And Jagadish, he's in control of that. So, as Mahaprabhu turns from the world of material desire toward the inner ideal, his inner ideal, he bows one last time to the manifestation of Krishna who rules the material world. Because this first half of the verse, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaram, Kavitam Va, Jagadisha Kamaye. So from this half of the verse is in the material world and material consciousness. And this is eliminated. When this is eliminated, then you say goodbye to Jagadish. Goodbye. Thanks for visiting Melbourne or Auckland. Please visit again. Thanks for visiting. They have these signs. Sometimes when you leave a city, it says, thank you for visiting Munich or something like this. Please come again. So Jagadish is saying, goodbye. You're leaving the world of Dhanam Janam Sundarim. Please come again or don't come again. So Lord Chaitanya is bowing at the end. Now he's entering the world of his Priyatam. Now he's entering into the world where it's causeless. Because on this side of Karana Samudra, everything has a cause, as we mentioned time and again. Cause and effect. I do this, I get that. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. It's cause and effect, Karanam. But when you cross the causal ocean, then it's causeless region. There's nothing you can do to make things happen. Everything happens by the Ichha Shakti of Bhagavan, Yogamaya Shakti. It just happens. Just like when a boy meets a girl, there's nothing that causes love to happen. It just happens. And you say, well, how did you fall in love with this girl? They say, fall in love. Fall in love means you're walking along and you trip. You say, how did you trip? I just tripped. So it just happens. There's no cause to it. You just meet somebody And you like them. That's it. Well, why do you like them? I don't know why I like them. I just like them. There's no cause. So this is in the spiritual world. You can't trace anything out. And that's our nature, because we're causal beings. We are our minds are function on causal principles. Our minds, intelligence, our bodies, everything functions on these principles of cause and effect. So we're always trying to trace out the cause of everything. Why? And when you enter the land of consciousness is not causal. So therefore it becomes achintya. And Jiva Goswami says, unless you can accept the principle of achintya shakti, that God has inconceivable powers and works in inconceivable ways, you can never make advancement in spiritual circles. Because reason, naya, and logic, and reason, they have to retire on this side of the causal ocean. But if we try to take our reason and logic with us across the Karana Samudra, we'll drown. We'll drown in the waters of the causal ocean. Because this is all on this side. Well, he did this, and then she said that, and then this, and he said that, and this caused that. Does bhakti have a cause? Or if I chant really good rounds, I'll become a really good devotee, and I'll really make advancement. It all depends on mercy. It's like if someone is a mother, she's loving her child, and she's not thinking, I'm serving my child and loving my child, because if I do this service, in 5 years from now, I'll become a really good mother. Right? She's doing her daily services and daily taking care of the child with as much love and attention as she can. And she's not thinking, I'm doing this so in 5 years from now, when I'll be really advanced in motherhood. I'll really be an advanced mother in 5 years. She's just doing it continually. So we do bhakti, we're just doing bhakti to please the Lord and best we can. And it's not like cause and effect, well, I'm doing this and in the future I'll be like this or be like that. That's in Krishna's hands. Whatever he wants to do, he wants to advance you or retard you or flip you upside down or whatever he wants to do with you. This calculation, this is all cause and effect. Let's see, if I chant really good rounds and if I go to every Mangalarti and go all the programs, then the temple president, he'll think I'm a really good devotee. And then he'll give me promotion, make me the temple commander. And then I'll get the Maha Prasad. So this is cause and effect. This is called cheating or calculation. So Mahaprabhu, he's starting to leave this world and he's bowing his head one last time to the manifestation of Krishna who rules the material world. Shiradakshay Vishnu, who is also known as Jagadish. He's calling him Jagadish. This name of God refers to the Paramatma, the overseer of the material world. Jagadish is the Aishvarya aspect of Krishna, or the super soul. I have another note I have over here. There's a lot of different notes all over the place here. So this is very interesting, because in this verse there's Jagadish and there's the word Ishvara or Ishvara. So now we'll hear how Jagadish, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in this book, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, which you're quoting from, he discusses about two types of nam. There's Gona nam and Mukya nam. Gona nam are those secondary names of the Lord which describe him in relation to the material world and his actions in the material world, like Srishtikarta, the creator and the supreme creator and doer, Adikarta, the original doer, or Jagadish or Jagannath. Although, if you consider Jagannath from the viewpoint of Mahaprabhu, then Jagannath means Rajendranandan Krishna. But ostensibly, the name Jagannath means the Lord of the Jagat, the Lord of the world. But if you have a Bhavvichar, consideration based on your inner sentiments of love and Bhav, then any word can mean anything. But strictly speaking, in Sanskrit terms, the word Jagannath is a secondary name of God, it's Gonanam, because it's about the Leelas of the Lord, which are avyakta and vyakta, manifest and unmanifest in the material world. Creation, destruction, Srishti Pralaya. So Jagadish is like that. It is Gonanam. But Ishvara can also, depends on the mood, but you'll see that Ishvara is actually referring to the Prananath. And Prananath means is Madhurya Nam. in terms of Radha and Krishna. So in Mukhyanam are those names of Krishna which deal with his pastimes, eternal pastimes, with his eternal associates in the spiritual firmament or spiritual abode, like Nanda Nandan, Yashoda Nandan, Brajendra Nandan, or Radhika Raman, or Radhanath, these type of names, or Krishna, Hari. These are all names, Damodar. These are all names which are full of Leela, specifically Braj Leela, and they're called Prem Nam. And this is a type of Nam which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was propagating, Prem Nam Sankirtan, which is Mukhya or primary Nam. And by chanting these names of the Lord, one gets Krishna Prema and enters into the Prem Dham. If one chants the Gona Nam, which is the Aishwarya Mayi Nam, name that's mixed with grandeur and majesty and all this opulence of material world, then this will simply purify one's heart. But it will not fill his heart with Braj Bhakti. You say Jagadish, 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 like these Indian song, they have some song, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, they're always saying this song. They have some Mangalartik song they sing. Play the cassette and Jaya Jagadisha. So this part, at least the Jaya Jagadisha part, that is good for purification and staying in the material world. So then he says, the second half of the verse, now the second half of the verse is the acceptance half of this verse. After we've done the elimination, then there's acceptance. Nadanam najanana sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kame mama janmani janmani. This is the pinching part of Chaitanya Shiksha. This is called Shikshastakam. The eight verses of instruction. To whom? To us. And this hurts because he says, mama janmani janmani, birth after birth. And we say, wait a minute, I don't want to take another birth. It's not a good deal. And Lord Chaitanya is saying, what's the problem? There's no problem taking another birth. So, all I want, life after life, is your service. A devotee does not mind to take rebirth in the material world, as long as he has an opportunity to render devotional service to Lord Krishna. Even after attaining Krishna Prem, a devotee may take rebirth according to the will of Krishna in order to preach and further relish the joy of devotional service. The repeated birth and death of a Vaishnava is not a miserable affair like conditioned souls who suffer tremendously while accepting and giving up their material bodies. Lord Chaitanya's lack of concern for transcending birth and death is due to the fact that for one who attains ruchi, the web of samsara is practically dismantled as a byproduct of Nam Sankirtan. So this is a very easy way to measure or decide whether or not we have actually attained ruchi for Nam. If we've attained Nam Ruchi, then the pleasure or the happiness or the taste of chanting Krishna's name and serving him at that level of bhajan, it gives us a sense of security and satisfaction and inner relish, which means ruchi, inner relish in our relationship or in the budding or opening of our eternal relationship with Krishna, which makes us feel convinced or sure that it doesn't matter if I take another birth. But for most of us, we shudder at the thought. Another birth? Oh. Because we don't have ruchi for Nam. Therefore, there's so many anarthas still haunting us, and like fear, and bhayam, and avidya, Abhinivesh, Asmita, Rag and Dvesh, all these coverings of the Chitta are still lingering there prominently or in a minute way. So we have various phobias and fears and doubts, samshaya. And so therefore we feel that I don't know anything, but I know one thing, that I want to go back to Godhead. I'm fed up with this world. I don't want any more anything to do with this world. These people in this world, my relatives, my family, my friends, my lovers, my husbands, my wives, the people of this world. Listen, buddy. I've been all over the place. I traveled from this country to that country. I had this relationship and that relationship. Listen, I've seen it all. I've really seen it all. I was born in a wealthy family. I've seen money. I've seen poverty. I've seen wealth. I've seen happiness. I've seen distress. I've seen it all. And this is my conclusion, that I'm convinced I don't want to take another birth. No way. So we have this kind of mood, and this may be what propels us into the local ISKCON temple, or maybe drives us forward to the feet of a guru. Arto artartik jignyasur gyani cha bharatarshipa. Krishna says four kinds of men approach the absolute truth in the seventh chapter of Gita. Chaturvida bhajanti mam jana sukritin arjuna. Arto artartik jignyasur gyani cha bharatarshipa. He says these are sukriti jana. Sukriti jana. These are jana, living entities or human beings that have done good deeds. They've done some good deeds, sukriti, in this life or previous life, and those good deeds have reciprocated with them by giving them some gyan, some realization or knowledge, and some detachment, vairagya, knowledge and detachment. This one will receive by doing sukriti, knowledge and detachment, gyan and vairagya. But that is, in one sense, can be a covering of bhakti. As we're reading in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the jnana and vairagya can be a covering of bhakti. It's called adi. Vairagya comes under karma, jnana, karmat, adi, ana, avritam. The adi part includes vairagya, yoga, astrology, etc. These can actually cover the pure devotion. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, listen everybody, guess what? Birth is glorious. It's wonderful. It's so much fun. Forget about the third canto of the Bhagavatam. The third canto of the Bhagavatam talks about the movements of the living entity, how the baby is packed upside down, standing on his head in Shirasan, which is okay for 3 minutes, but not for 9 months. Stand on your head upside down on your mother's womb. And it's all right when you're standing on your head, but do you ever stand on your head when you're doing yoga and the flies are biting your backside? Especially when you're in India, you do yoga, at least we do. And then you stand on your head and then some flies come and bite your backside or bite your leg. It's so disturbing. It's hard to keep your shirasan standing on your head. So imagine me being standing on your head in your mother's womb for 9 months and all these bed bugs and other bugs are in there biting you. And then besides that, your mother's a Bengali, so she eats all this fish and mustard oil and she eats a whole bunch of chilies to digest it. And then you're getting, your little bottom is getting burned by the chili powder, red chili powder rubbed on your backside. It's nice if you have muscle sprain and you rub some Bengay on your muscles to relieve the pain, but when you're a tender baby, it doesn't feel very good. So, and this way you get burned inside the womb and you cry. There's one professor, a psychologist, he wrote a book called Primal Scream. We studied in college psychology. This is important because if this isn't there, then it's a dead baby. But when a baby comes out of the womb, they give him a slap, and what does he do? He screams. He was screaming silently, silent scream, inside the womb. And then when he came out, everybody heard what he was singing. Everybody heard the song he was singing in the womb. He sang a few phrases from it. So we cry from the first day on for the next 80 years. It's simply a road of tears. Isn't it? So having all this good knowledge and experience, then we shudder at the idea of rebirth. The Lord Chaitanya is saying, look, I'm doing it all the time. What to speak of Krishna? Krishna is even telling, listen, If you understand the transcendental nature of my birth and activities, you'll never take another birth in this world. Well, listen, I'm banking on this verse. Chapter 4, verse 9 of Gita, it says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yovati tatvata. Jaktva deham punarjanma nayati mamati sorjana. Hey, Arjun, you'll not take another birth if you understand the divya janam and divya karma, the transcendental activities and birth that I'm undergoing. Well, that's very interesting. That if you understand Krishna's birth and his pastimes, then you don't take another birth. But if you're Krishna's servant and you're Krishna's devotee, you always want to be where Krishna is. And you always want to serve him. But Krishna himself is taking birth at every moment. This is a paradox. Because as soon as Krishna is born in Mathura, and he finishes taking birth there, then he's born in the next Mathura. And then when he's finished in that Mathura, then the next Mathura, and Mathura, Mathura. And it goes eternally on like this. So Lord Chaitanya is trying to also invite us, oh, it's okay to take birth again, but take birth as a devotee. This is what he's telling here. Because you can understand that nothing is lost for the devotee. Whatever you attain, no one will take the wealth away. It's not like dacoits or taxmen who take away your material wealth. The robbers or the thieves or the government, they take away your accumulated wealth. Whether you hide it or whether you declare it, the taxman takes it. You hide it and the gundas take it. So one way or another, what to speak of time itself and death, they take away everything. And Krishna, that's Krishna, Mrityu sarvaharashchaham. At death I take everything, except bhakti. Devotion I don't take. I keep that with me. I keep your account with me. So whatever devotion we attain in this life, Krishna returns it in next life. And so we begin again. So if we attain ruchi and bhajan, ruchi for nam, then when we're little, or as soon as we take birth again, if we take birth again, by the will of the Lord, then that ruchi for bhajan is there, from birth. And you sometimes see, especially here at Radhakund, among Indian children, you see young boys come here, from Bengal or Assam or Manipur. They're 9 years old, 8 years old, and their grandfather or their uncle or someone, he's a baba. He's a babaji at Radhakund. And their father has many sons or whatever, and he says, listen, go live with your uncle at Radhakund. Your grandfather, whatever. So he comes here at 7 or 8 years old. And then he starts doing bhajan, picks up the mrdanga, starts playing, chanting Hare Krishna. He's blissful. He's happy. He's joyful. He's looking and he feels like, this is me. I'm in my sarup. This is my natural position. I'm not forced to be here. I'm not doing it because I think it's good for me or it's supposed to benefit me. This is my swabhav. It's swabhaviki karma or swabhaviki kriya. It's natural activity for me. And then you look at that person, you think, how is this possible? He's such a tiny tyke, right? Small boy. And then you can understand it must be from last life. It's called purva samskara, previous life's activities. So he's like this. Well, what about me? If I take another birth, well, I have to go to high school and college and graduate school and medical school and type out this paper and that paper and this and that. Is that the type of bhav we have, or is that the type of asset we've acquired from our activities? No way, not possible. So what's the problem? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati once said that, he said, most of my disciples, they'll take three births. And this first birth, with me, they are struggling with Namaparad. They're just trying to cross the ocean of Namaparad. And they'll finish this birth and take another birth. And that birth, they'll come to Namavas. And then after that birth, then they'll come to Shudanam. And there's one verse that's often quoted, I believe it's maybe Padma Purana, I'm not sure, but says that one who spontaneously takes to the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he has been previously chanting Hare Krishna Mantra for 100 births. Sounds a little bit, wow, where's my hope? Of course, anything's possible. This is always the acharyas, they always try to uplift us after they flatten us, then they try to uplift us. And they state the point and they talk about Jad Bharat in the fifth canto and so many things. And then they say, but we are born in the age of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Vridayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurachvase Namah. And he's very, very merciful. Nityananda Prabhu is even more merciful than Gauranga. So if we somehow or other hold tightly to the feet of Nittai and Gaur, then anything's possible. Even in one life, we can attain perfection. But it's not that we just say Nittai Gaur, Nittai Gaur, Nittai Gaur, and we don't actually see in front of our face the tangible advancement or the tangible progress that we're making. It's not some invisible thing. It's not like the Christians. Well, you do be a good Christian, then when you die, you won't know anything. You don't know anything yet. Everything's being kept in reserve for that final moment, that final flight. When you're on your deathbed, just when you're about to die, then the angels will come down and they'll sew a pair of wings on your body. They'll attach with some Velcro or something. They put some Velcro on your sides and they attach, Velcro. And they put some wings on your side and you'll get your set of wings and you'll fly off the bed and you'll become an angel in heaven forever. Pie in the sky. So bhakti is not like that. Bhakti is directly perceived. And it's explained step by step. Ado shada tata sada sangha bhajana kriya. This is kind of the skeleton outline. Then the skeleton outline is filled, the details are filled in by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is appearing as a further installment of Rupa Goswami's mercy to give us books like Madhurya Kadambini. And then afterwards, Bhaktivinoda came to give further installment to fill in more details by giving us Madhurya Harinam Chintamani. And then finally, let's summarize the whole thing, put it all together, and make it easy in one package. Put all the books together, all the processes together, and to present the progressive path of bhajan, and that is bhajan rahasyam. This is everything in one. So this is why this book is so valuable and so important. And he's analyzing verse by verse and giving all these explanations of each of these words, janmani, janmani, etc. So in this relation to janmani, janmani, in this Ruchi Bhajan section, text 13, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling, birth after birth, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is aspiring for the association of devotees. He's saying, he titles this verse, this is from Bhagavatam, this is Brahma Vandanam, chapter 14, text 30, a prayer for attaining the association of Braja Bhaktas is spoken by Lord Brahma. Tarastame nata saburi bhago pavechavan yatra tuva tirascham hinaham ekopi bhavaj jananam bhutva nisheve tava parapalavam. O Bhagavan, may I be so fortunate as to attain the association of your devotees and under their guidance obtain service to your lotus feet, be it in this life or any human birth, or in a birth such as an animal, bird, worm, or moth. This is oftentimes the same prayer is echoed in different songs, as we mentioned the other day, Kita Janmahau, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. A bird, a worm, or a moth, or maybe a minor bird in Radhakund. Let me be born as a minor bird in Radhakund, or a tota, parrot, and sevakunj. I can sing, I can fly all over and get a bird's eye view of Krishna's leelas and pastimes. And then I can come to some ashram and hang upside down from the girders of the ashram and show my expertise in acrobatics. And why I'm showing off my expertise in acrobatics by hanging upside down from the steel girder, I will sing the glories of Radharani. Like my cousins. My cousins also do. They sing about the Radhagun, Radha Mahima, Radhagun, Radha Madhurya, the sweetness of Radharani's qualities and beauty, which is part of Madhyan Leela. I can also sing. My cousin birds are also singing Shukanshari, Shukanshari Samvad. So I will do this service. As that the other day, remember there was that parrot hanging upside down up there singing about the Madhyan Leela. You saw that one? He was Maybe you weren't here. He was hanging up there, hanging upside down, and just singing like too much. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also lived here at Radhakund and Lita's Kunj, and he saw all these parrots and moths and worms, birds and animals, and he saw, look how happy they are, how joyfully they're singing the glories of the Lord, running here and there. So okay, I take another birth. Just some purport. Anyway, just that's basically the point. He says, if I take birth in Braj from the womb of an animal, bird, worm or moth, or any other subhuman species, I will consider myself very fortunate. Even the mercy available to the deer in Braj is not easily available. In this birth as Brahma. In Braj, the deer, they get an opportunity to cleanse the dust from your limbs with their tongues, and you caress them with your hands. In other words, when the Lord is moving through the forest or moving behind the cows, coming from Nandagaon and going to Govardhan, there's so much dust on the road behind all the cows' feet. Then when he enters the forest, because the deer live in the forest, they're a little shy, and they prefer the forest. When the deer enter the forest, when Krishna enters the forest and the cows are wandering and pasturing in the valleys of Govardhan Hill, then the deer take the opportunity to approach the Lord when he sits under a tree, or sometimes he reclines, he lies on the ground and puts his head on the thigh of Sridham, and some other coward boys massage his feet. Then the deer say, oh, here's an opportunity for us also. The coward boys are massaging Krishna's feet, and he's relaxing with his head on the thigh of Sridham. So they approach very quietly and very silently. They come up behind Krishna, they start licking his back like this. Krishna says, oh, So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's envisioning this, I'll do this service. I'll become a deer in Braj, and I'll lick the dust from your limbs, from your arms and legs and back, with my tongue. And then, what will Krishna do in return? He will caress them. He will embrace them with his hands. He'll stroke their neck, or he'll turn around and he'll scratch them like this. So Bhaktivinoda, he's anticipating, oh, what fortune I'll have. I'll be born as a deer in Vrindavan, and Krishna will reciprocate with me like this. I want to take birth in any species, high or low, where I can serve your lotus feet under the guidance of your devotees. This is my earnest desire and will be my good fortune. So this is Mama Janmani Janmani, then Ishvare. Ishvare. Now this is also Nam Sankirtan. Ishvare. So now why is Lord Chaitanya using the word Ishvara here? He used Jagadish, now he's using Ishvara. So beginning in verse 4, Mahaprabhu used the word Jagadish to describe the Lord of the material world, the Paramatma of all conditioned souls. Then at the end of the verse, he calls his deity Ishvara. By this name, Gauranga refers not to the Paramatma, but to his Pran Ishvara, the Lord of his life, Prananath. And again, now he's saying Ishvara. So now, because at this point, it's kind of like you're climbing, you get to the top, then you slide down very fast. Like some people go skiing. So they have to take a ski lift, and they sit on some little contraption, and they have their skis on, and they go up to their objective is to ski. To go down the mountain and enjoy the speed and thrill of zipping around on the side of some mountain, Innsbruck or wherever. So they go up the ski lift, and then they get where their destination is, the top of the mountain, and then their objective is to come down very fast. So these first four verses of Shikshastakam are the ski lift. We're going to the top of the mountain. And when we get to the top of the mountain, then you have to let go of the ski lift. You have to jump off. In fact, it kind of like, it goes like this, and you get off, or you go back down to the bottom. So you get off, you get up at the top, and then you get off. You eliminate yourself. You eliminate your attachment to the ski lift. You let go of the ski lift. And then after that, it's clear sailing. So the elimination part is this Nadana Najana Nasundarim. So at the top of this, at the top of the mountain is Jagadish, at the end of the ski lift. So you offer pranams, Jai Ho, Jai Jagadish Hare. You offer pranams to Jagadish, Nadana Najana Nasundarim, Kaviram Va Jagadish Kamaye. Because Jagadish is the Lord of the world of Kam. Jagadisha Kamaye. This is the world of desire. When our desire stops, our sojourn in the world stops. When our desire stops, our material body stops. When there's no more desire, there's no more material body. No more material desire, no more material body. So Jagadish, he's a Jagadisha Kamaye. This whole Jagat, this whole universe is based on desire. Right? Desire of the living entity to enjoy separately from the Lord creates the material world. So now we're coming down. So now after this, now we're tasting the thrill, the delight of bhakti. So it's not much fun going up on the ski lift, but it's a lot of fun coming down on the skis. It's a thrill, it's a delight, going so fast and jumping and going here and there. So this is Namruchi. That going through Anartha Nivritti and this swimming across this ocean of Anartha Nivritti is a great struggle and a lot of sweat and hard work. When one gets ruchi for bhajan, then it becomes not so hard. It becomes easy. So now, the Ishvara, you say goodbye. Then you meet the Lord of the heart. The Lord of the heart is Ishvara. The Lord of the heart means the Lord of love, because once you have ruchi for nam, then very soon we will attain love for nam, prem nam. Everything goes very fast after ruchi. Ruchi, then asakti, then bhava and prema. By this name, Gauranga is referring, by Ishvara, he's not referring to the Paramatma or the Parameshvara, but to his Pranishvara. Because sometimes Ishvara, you can say, means Parameshvara, which is also Paramatma or Jagadish. But he's saying, no, Ishvara means the Ishvara my Pran, Prananath, to say even aparaha, like Ashlishiva Parvatam Panashtamam, Adarshanam Mamatam Karotava, Yatatatava Viridantu Lampato, Mat Prananathas, to say even aparaha. A Prananath, this is a Pranishvara. The Lord of my pran, the Lord of my heart, the Ishvara of my heart. So this is the Lord of our love. Our love begins to sprout at the level of Uchi. You may have a field. You have a field, you don't see anything in it. Although you put seeds there, seeds are there, and you may watch for years. We planted some trees here, Ashok trees, and they're about 5 feet tall, and there were no leaves on the tree. And I was extremely skeptical. I said to the nursery while, I said, what kind of tree is this? A tree with no leaves. He said, no, it's slow. It'll come. And so 1 year went by with no leaves. And we keep watering, and I said, what am I watering? I'm watering this thing, but is it dead or what? Sometimes we would scratch the bark ever so lightly, and then you see a little green there. He said, oh, Jiva Hogya. There's some life there. Life is going. Okay, keep watering. Then after 1 year, all of a sudden, one leaf, then two leaves, and like standing behind there is one Ashok tree. Has a few leaves. And now you can see some signs of life. So that first year or so with no leaves, that's called Ado Shraddhata Sada Sangha Bhajana Kriya Anartha Nivritti. So the Anartha Nivritti stage, you have some doubts. Well, do I have any bhakti or do I not? Are there any leaves there or not? I keep watering and watering and watering, but I don't see any signs of life. Let me scratch a little bit. Look inside. Oh, yeah. I am a devotee. I think so. Yeah, I'm a bhakta. I'm a devotee, but I don't see much life energy being expressed here or much symptoms of growth or greenery or any kind of feelings of attachment or even some, you know, fake alligator tears welling up in the far distant corner of my eye, even just a one bindu, ashru bindu, a minute drop of a tear of a reflection of a spark of affection for Krishna. I don't even see that much coming. But then all of a sudden, then poing, it's like this. And when ruchi comes, then things go very fast. So thus Lord Chaitanya prays for unalloyed devotion to Krishna, his Praneshwara, Prananath, life after life. And he no longer prays to the Paramatma, to whom he is bidding farewell. Although, it is not until the stage of Asakti that one's personal Ishtadev, his worshipful deity, comes to sit in the sadhaka's heart and fully displace the Paramatma. In a stage of Ruchi, this displacement begins to manifest. Thus, Lord Chaitanya expresses that Jagadish steps aside for Praneshwara, Krishna, to take over the kingdom of his heart. For the advanced devotee, Bhagavan takes the place of the Paramatma in the heart. By invoking the name Ishvara, which refers to Praneshwara, in the last line of verse 4, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye Mama Janmane Janmane Ishvare Bhavatat Bhakti Rahoita Kitvayi. This word Ishvara or Praneshwara, Lord Chaitanya implies that the sadhaka's shift toward actual Leela Seva has its earliest beginning in Ruchi, represented by this verse. As one moves from the jurisdiction of Paramatma, Jagadish, to the jurisdiction of one's personal deity situated in his eternal Leela. The influence of Krishna's Sarup Shakti slightly manifests at the stage of Ruchi. As Krishna blesses his devotee, the influence of the Sarup Shakti develops further as Ruchi matures and turns into a Sakti, or attachment, and it is complete in Bhava. As one advances in Bhakti, from the beginning stages of Ruchi to Prema, the names of the Lord that one calls upon, the names that one calls upon the Lord become more and more personal and intimate. Like you may say, Hey Jagadish, Hey Jagannath, Hey Paramatma. Hey, then you might say, Hey Ishvara, and then you might say, Hey Priyatam. Right? That's like Brijvasi is like we say Radharani and Krishna. We say, oh, we worship Radha and Krishna, or Srimati Radharani and Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And then you meet Brijvasis and they say, who are you talking about? Are you talking about Larali Lal? Are you talking about Larali Lal? Who's Larali Lal? I'm not actually saying it right because I can't say the proper Hindi. Rolled R is Lalali. Lalali. Something in L. You know the language good. So it's like L-A-D, it's a rolled R. We would say Lara Lee, but it's not really Lara Lee, it's Lardly or something, which means beautiful, affectionate, sweet, tender little girl. Radha. And then Lal is her boyfriend. So the names, as you go closer and closer and develop more and more intimacy and love with Krishna, then the names change, which is a very common feature. In the office, you're Mr. Smith, Mr. J.K. Smith III, and that's how you sign your letters. And then when you go home, you're John. Your wife calls you John. And then in the bedroom, she calls you Poopy or Pookie or something. You know, or whatever. Or Babubu, or, you know, all these Bengalis, they have these names, Pupu, Babu, Bubu, Murari Bapu, and they have, in other words, there's intimate space and intimate names. I don't know, whatever. You know, Dimple, or DP, or PP, or, you know. But in the office, he's John D. Wilson, III. Joseph S. Shoemaker. And you go home, he's called Poo-Poo. <or something. laughs> So it's like we say, Srimati Radharani and Bhagavan Sri Krishna. What are the names of your deities? Oh, this is Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna. Acha? Then you go to their house, and they also have Radha and Krishna. What are the names of your deity? Oh, this is Priya Priyatam. Priya Priyatam? Who the hell is that? This is my dear one, and this is my dear one, and my dearest one. This is my beloved one, and my most beloved one. So this is very much affectionate. Like, Krishna doesn't say, Mother Yashoda. Mata Yashoda. He says, Janani. Janani. Or like, Madhu Mangala. That's a long name. Krishna says, Hey, Batu. Hey, Batu. Hey, Batu, you jerk. You puggle. Madhu Mangala. My name is Madhu Mangala. So all these nicknames. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had many, many nicknames for his sannyas, for his intimate devotees in Gaudiya Math. He had many, many nicknames, which I can't remember now because I've been out of the circle. But Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj used to mention the affectionate nicknames that Siddhanta Saraswati would call his different leading sannyasis. Because he's like father. This is a symptom of guru, is Vatsalya Bhav for Shishya. And he very much exemplified that quality. Strict, but hard as a thunderbolt and soft as a rose, as they say. That slips to my mind, I can't think, but he had different nicknames. And then some devotees, some of our godbrothers had heard about this, and some of our godbrothers used to use nicknames. Our Ridayananda Maharaj, he used to see me, he I don't know where he got it from, but when he saw me, he used to call me Captain Nitty. I don't know, you know, what that's all about. I never really asked, but he said, "Oh, here's Captain Nitty." Oh, I don't know, that's some cartoon character or whatever, I don't know. But it's not exactly my name, but Captain Nitty. So this name, Ishvara, is... let me just finish, because we're almost out of time. So we're discussing how this... we become the names we refer to the Lord, and this is a very significant point, which is mentioned in other places also, that the ruler of the heart, of the conditioned soul, is known as Jagadish, or rather, more often, Paramatma, Oversoul, Supersoul, Parameshvara, or Shiradakshay Vishnu. And he has four arms, Chaturbhuj Narayan, Disk, and Padma, Gada Padma, Shank, and what else? Gada, Club, Shank, Disk. And he's ruling there with all of his Aishvarya and all of his power, protection. But when one advances in the path of bhakti, if he's in Madhurya Mayi Bhakti, and he's worshipping the Lord in Vrindavan, or he's worshipping the Lord in Ayodhya, and not in Vaikuntha, then Bhagavan will actually move over. He'll actually take a powder. And Bhagavan Parameshwar will move out of the heart, and your Ishtadev will move into your heart. When Lord Ramachandra appeared at the end of Treta Yuga, then before him there was another avatar that was moving over the earth, a Shaktivesh avatar named Parasuram. And Parasuram was simply a delegated authority, a representative of Lord Ram, Bhagavan Sri Ram. He received his power from him, and he was chopping up all the Kshatriyas, as you know, 21 times and driving them out of India. This is Parasuram's rule to create a proper environment for saintly rule. Then Ramachandra came, and Ramachandra was also a Kshatriya. So when Parasuram met Ramachandra, he said, "Hey, listen, you're some bogus Kshatriya, I'm going to kill you." Ramachandra said, "Really?" And Ramachandra put his hand up like this, like they show in Hindi movies. He put his hand up like this, and you see in the movie, all the Shakti comes out, all this light comes out of Parasuram, goes into Ram's hand. And he takes it all in his hand, and then Parasuram is like, "Oh." And he says, "Don't you know, I am the avatar. Now you have done your work. You go to the Himalayas and do tapasya. Your work is done. Jao." So then Parasuram, he went off to the Himalayas, and Ramachandra began his lila of yada yada hi dharmasya. So this is the fact. When one becomes a bhakta, then Paramatma, he is replaced. He leaves the stage of the heart, and then our Ishtadev comes there. And this is proven by Hanuman and Treta Yuga, when someone asked him about who was in his heart, and he said, "My Lord Rama is in my heart." And someone challenged him, and then he opened his chest and he said, "Look, you see?" And when he opened his heart, he didn't see Chaturbhuj Narayan, he saw Sita and Ram. So that's why the Mahabhagavat, he sees the Lord in everyone's heart. He sees Radha Shyam Sundar or Radha Govinda in everyone's heart. So that's why he's so much inspired. Because Krishna is in every atom and every heart, so wherever the Mahabhagavat moves, he sees his Lord. So he feels respect and regard for everyone. So this is, in verse 4, Lord Garanga calls upon the super soul, Paramatma, Jagadish, to fix him in devotional taste. So in the first part of the verse, he's praying, "Oh Paramatma, you're with me. You're in my heart. Oh Jagadish, please help me with this elimination program. Please help me eliminate this Dhanana Janana Sundaram, all these material desires and attachments. Please help me eliminate all these, and please give me a taste for the holy name." Because this is Paramatma. And once he does that, once we have a taste for the holy name, we can say, "Thank you very much. Now you can go elsewhere. Now you can take a walk, and now I want to worship my Lord, Radha and Krishna." So he's calling upon his is Ishvara. In the first part of the verse, he's calling upon us Ishvara as Parameshvara, the personal Lord of his life and heart. And then, in verse 5, as a sakti develops and his deep attachment develops for the object of Nam Bhajan, Lord Chaitanya calls his Lord as Nanda Nandan. It's a very nice progression. First it's Jagadish, then it's Ishvara. And that Ishvara is the Pranishvara. And then in the next verse is Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. So Ai Nanda Tanuja, one who has taken birth from the body of Nanda. Nanda Tanuja means Nanda Nandan, the son of Nanda Nandan. So just see how intimate the names are. First, God is called, Hey Super Soul, Hey Jagadish, Hey Lord of the Universe. That's very external, full of Aishwarya. Then there gets a little sweetness. Hey Prananath, you're the Lord of my heart. You're the Lord of my very being. You're my Praneshwara. And then, now, but that's kind of generic. Praneshwara can be, but what Praneshwara? But my heart is in Vrindavan. My heart has moved into Vrindavan. You're the Lord of my heart no matter where I am. But now my heart has entered Vrindavan. I want to be your kinkari. I want to be your maidservant. I Nanda Chandrajan Kinkaram. So now the Praneshwara has become specific. He's become the Lord of Vrindavan, Nanda Nandan. So this is being explained. He calls him Nanda Nandan, the playful, sweet son of Nanda Maharaj in Braj, Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Then, in the intimacy of deep love, full of Braja Bhav and separation, or Radharani's Viraha Bhav and separation from her Lord, Garunga cries out, Govinda Virahina Me. Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. Right? This is the next verse, Ai Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. That's two verses later. Then there's the symptoms of Bhav, which he experiences. And then as those symptoms of Bhav clear, and the tears of love, Nayanam Galar Dashudaraya, when the tears of love clear from his eyes, and then Garanga remembers, oh, my Nanda Nandan. But Nanda Nandan, you're the Lord of my heart. You're my Praneshwar. You're my Nanda Nandan. And I'm your Kinkari. But where are you? I don't see you. I don't feel your presence. I'm burning in separation. Oh, Govinda. Govinda Virahiname. So then it's Govinda. So I'm crying. Then Govinda re-enters the heart. Then it's Prananath. Anyway, oh, you've come back. You've come back because this verse, Yugayutandameshina, is Virahabhav. It's called Viraha Prem and Separation. Then it's Shlishava Parvatam, is Sambhog Prem, meeting. Calling out, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. Then, oh, Govinda, you're there. Mat Prananathas tu Saevanapraha. Mat Prananathas, you're the, oh, you've come back. You've come back to my heart. You went out of my heart, and I called Govinda, Govinda, Virahena. I'm separated from you. Now you come back. Now you're my Prananath. Tusa Evan Aparaha. And I don't know anyone else but you. And please don't go anywhere else but my heart. Do whatever you want. Crush me. Do anything. But stay in my heart. Trample me. Step on me. Embrace me. Love me. But don't go. Please don't go. I can't bear your separation again. Hey, Prananath. And this is the Ashlishiva Parvatam. Then in the sweet, confidential heart region of complete intimacy in verse 8, Mahaprabhu calls her lover Alampato, which means debauch, and then fully surrenders everything to submerge in the fathomless ocean of self-forgetful love, sighing, Prananath, oh my Prananath, mat prananathas tu saeva naparaha. So we'll stop here. Madaram samhapayat. Everything should end on a sweet note. So we just entered the Gambira, and now we're locked, the doors are locked, and we're in the Gambira, and Mahaprabhu was crying out, Ashlishiva Parvatam Panashtamam. Is there any comment? Question? Out there, far away, in left field? I feel like I'm in a baseball park or something. First base, second base, third base, left field, outfield. It's American baseball. This is home plate. So scattered audience. It's like the rishis at Namisharanya. They would sit under different trees, and because every rishi likes to have his space. So mostly Western people here, and Western people are space lovers. They have to have at least 10 feet of space around them. Well, if there are 50 Indians here, first of all, they would all be sitting right here. And he's feeling a little shy because they think, well, we're with Westerners, we better act like Westerners. So mostly they're outnumbered here. Usually I'm with Indians, and if there were the same number of Indians, they would be, they wouldn't go any more than 5 feet away from me. I'm not used to preaching to Western devotees, actually, but there's definitely a difference. every Westerner, okay, here's a good spot for me. I got about 6 feet around me. And then when the next Westerner comes in, he thinks, well, wait a minute, I can't get too close to him because he needs his 6 feet, and I need my 6 feet. So then 6 feet and 6 feet and 6 feet. So you have four Westerners, and all of a sudden they're 30 feet away from the speaker. You're speaking to four people, and they're when the fifth guy is 100 feet away. Hey, out there. That's why you need, if you speak to five Westerners, you need a sound system. But when I go on Indian programs, I go in a house and there's 100 Indians. They never have a sound system. The train, boy, the train's insane. The train, you had the seat, fixed seat, you have booked your seat. There's six in a seat. But that's all, four, it's supposed to be four in a seat, but they didn't tell you that that only means after 11 p.m. You know, there's a bogey, it's four tier. Four people asleep here, it's two tier. But during the day, there's 40 people on the seats. Then by 11 o'clock, they've cleared out, and then the four people, usually the four people get to sleep there. And sometimes at night, a few people come in. I remember so many times traveling on the train, and I'm, you know, it's booked. I have the whole bunk is mine, or whatever they call it, the seat. And I'm lying there sleeping, and it's AC, and then you kind of curl up when you sleep. And then I went to stretch my legs, and I couldn't move them. And I looked up, and there were two guys were on the end of my, you know, because I left a little space on the end of my bed because I bent my legs. Then they somehow were looking around in the AC compartment. They found that space, and these two guys jumped up there, and they were sleeping. So instead of one, there was three on one bed. So then I thought, first I thought I would just push them off the seat. But then I said, well, I should try to be a little gentle. So I just kept sleeping. This is India. One way or another, you develop tolerance, willfully or unwillfully. It really breaks all your wild oats by being in India. You had some question or someone? No? Yes.
Well, regarding this development of taste or attachment, there are this avaratika, prakshipatnika, shakti of maya, throwing in
covering, yeah.
Does it come into play in each case and in the state of anatta nirviti, or I mean, when maybe some signs of taste are appearing?
Yes, the point is that these states, all these states kind of are always existing in their own way, just like ruchi. It's not, although we sometimes, when we try to explain in English, we say that ruchi deepens. When ruchi deepens, it turns into a sakti. When attachment or a sakti deepens, it becomes bhava, and bhava condenses and becomes prema. But it's not exactly like that, although we describe it like that to give some kind of understanding that, again, there's, because as I said, we're causal beings, so we think in terms of cause and effect. Things that are explained in terms of cause and effect, we can understand, we can relate. Yes, this turns into that. I did this, I added this and this, and I got that. I went in the laboratory and I added this chemical to that chemical, then it turned red. And then then steam came out. So this makes steam. So everything is like this. And everything, relationships and chemistry, everything is cause and effect. But in the field of bhakti, everything is transcendental. So even when you attain prema, the level of prema, there's sneha, man, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. But it's not that sneha, even they describe sometimes when sneha becomes condensed, then it becomes pranaya, and then pranaya becomes rag. But it's not like that. All these states are always existing. It's not that when Radharani goes into man, then she's stuck there. Now she goes into man, or if she goes from man into rag or anurag, because once she goes into mahabhav, she attains mahabhav, then that's the final. That's the topmost expression of Krishna prema is mahabhav, right? So we say Radharani is Mahabhav Sarupini. So when she's existing or experiencing Mahabhav, that means then she can't go back again and have man or sneha, right? Because we say it's cause and effect. Once you're there, you don't go back. When you reach the effect, then you don't go back to the cause. But sometimes she exhibits man, and sometimes anurag, and sometimes bhav, and mahabhav, and sometimes sneha. So in the same way, asakti is always existing with its own attributes, and ruchi is always existing. It's not that when we go into a sakti, oh, now we're in a sakti. We don't have any ruchi anymore. I'm attached to Krishna, but I don't have any ruchi, because ruchi was a previous stage, like cause and effect. Oh, ruchi is the cause. And when ruchi gets very deep, then I develop a sakti. Oh, and then a sakti, then I have bhava. So now I have bhava. I'm in a state of bhava bhakti. I'm practicing bhava bhakti. So I don't have any more sakti. I'm not attached to Krishna anymore. And I don't have any more ruchi, right? And I don't have any more nishta. No, it's not like that. All these things exist independently. Therefore, there's no more sadhu sangha. Oh, I had sadhu sangha, and I got diksha, and then I was practicing bhajana kriya, and I got anartha nivritti. So I don't have any more sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha is all the way to the spiritual world, and it's forever. When you're associating with Rupa Manjari and Lita Sakhi, that's also sadhu sangha. It's higher association, teaching how to love and serve Krishna. The sadhu sangha is eternal, forever. So all these things are basically eternal and forever, except for anartha nivritti. Alright? Anarthas are not eternal and forever, thank God. Because after anartha nivritti comes artha praviti. When you get rid of the things you don't want, then you accept the things that you want. You want nishta, and nishta is forever. Radharani has great nishta. She's really a nishtita bhakta. So she has nishta, and she has ruchi, and she has asakti, and she has bhav, all kinds of bhavas, and she has prema, and all kinds of premas. So even in the level of anartha nivritti, for us to go anywhere, to do anything, we're getting some ruchi of us. We're getting some shadow of ruchi. There's some taste. Otherwise, why are we still here? We're not automatons or imbeciles or we're not robots being programmed by some mechanical software. We're getting some taste. Pramjusva nivartate, some taste of prasad. Rasavarjam rasopyasa. The verse is there. Vishayav nivartante niharasya dehana. Rasavarjam rasopyasya pramjusva nivartate. Rasavarjam. So this rasa, rasa means taste. Vishayav nivartante. Even at the platform of giving up vishay or sense enjoyment, we're able to give up sense enjoyment because we're getting some taste of bhakti ras. Bhakti is an ocean. Bhakti rasa amrita. Sindhu. It is an unlimited ocean with no depth and no borders. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. The ananda or bliss of bhakti increases and increases. It's not limited like an ordinary ocean. We say ocean, but it's not fair comparison. Because the ocean, you can find the depth. You can find the bottom and you can find the shore. But the bottom and the shore of the ocean of bhakti can never be measured or never be reached because it expands at every moment. So there's ruchi even in anartha nivritti. Because if we don't get the taste for prasadam, then how can we give up the taste of McDonald's? Or Kentucky Fried. Chicken or beef and all these things. Or smorgasbord or Löwenbräu. How can you give up Johnny Walker unless you take sweet rice? Right? Or Scotsman or Diplomat or whatever they have around the world. The finest vintage wine of 1971. Cognac, what do they say? Right. So even a bhakta is getting some taste. He gives up his chicken and fish, Ganga phal. As the Bengalis say, we're not eating fish, we're eating the fruit of the Ganga. Like they say Ganga phal. When they're eating fish, they don't say fish. They say, because so many Vaishnavas, so many Gaudiya Vaishnavas eat fish. And you say, what is this? This is meat. It's not meat, this is fruit. It's fruit from the Ganga. It's Ganga phal. I'm serious, I'm not joking. There's thousands and thousands of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Hare Krishna, Nektis, everything in Bengal that eat fish every day. And they say it's Ganga phal. And they say eggs are, what kind of laddus? They say some kind of laddus. I forget. Eggs are some kind of laddus. What do you call them? You know, there's a name for it. I forget. But they say eggs are some kind of laddu. Safed laddu or something like that. What's the name? I don't know. Murga laddu. Yeah, murga laddu. You know, murga means chicken, no? Yeah, they say egg is murga. Hey, what is this? Not egg. This is murga laddu. Murga means chicken. For breakfast we have laddus and lunch we have fruits. It's like it's for Chaturmasi, you know, and just having murga laddus with eggs for breakfast and Ganga phal for lunch. Gaur Hari Bo. So this is the thing. Ruchi is there. But it's, you can say it's a vase. But when you can measure how much ruchi you have, it's really easy. It's not, that's why I say it's practical, it's factual, it's pragmatic, it's subjective. You're the subject, and then you can see. Am I developing detachment from the Dhanana Janana Sundaram? If you say yes, that means ruchi's there. If you say no, that means ruchi's not there, not very much. Yes, I'm attached to Krishna in the form of prasadam. That's it. So you're having some ruchi. And because of that attachment for prasadam, I've lost my attachment for non-veg. Okay, that's good. That's some ruchi. And that's come because that's a blessing of non-prabhu. Because you're chanting the holy name and you're taking prasadam, you've got some blessing. But Nadanana Janana Sundaram Kavitam, when you lose all attachment for salvation and emancipation, because this is the one that's really deeply ingrained, desire to go back to Godhead. This is deep. This is called Salokya Mukti. This is pretty cool for prema. It's all right for day one, but then when you actually study the philosophy of Gaudiya Vedanta, then you understand that this actually works against surrender to Krishna. Krishna, I am your surrendered servant. You want to lift me up? Lift me up. You want to put me down? Put me down. You want to spin me around? Spin me around. You have work for me here? Then keep me here. You want to take me there? Take me there. No, no, but Krishna, I don't want to take another birth. Then what is it? This is not surrender. This is attachment. I want. So, well, it's kind of makes you nervous. You know, but this is the crucial stage, because this ruchi, as I said, from ruchi everything goes very fast. When you have taste, when you have a natural taste for something, it's easy to become attached. I guess, like you never had ice cream. Say you never had ice cream in your life, and you go to some, you're from some, you know, funny country where they don't have ice cream. And you go somewhere, and then they give you ice cream, and you taste it, you say, oh, this tastes good. And then you taste it a few times, and then attachment comes. If it's something you like, if you have, you just taste it once, oh, I like it. How do you like? Oh, I really like it. Oh, it's really good. I really like it. Would you like it again next week or tomorrow? Yes, why not? Indeed. And then different flavor and a different flavor, and you become more and more attached to it. So when there's taste, a natural liking, then attachment becomes very deep. And it comes very fast. And then attachment, and that's a sakti. And then you get bhav for it. And someone just talks about ice cream and you start salivating. Or you start dreaming about different flavors. And well, what about strawberry pecan and vanilla fudge and this and that, or I don't know, whatever. I haven't had it about 35 years. I don't know what it looks like. But anyway, the idea is that, you know, this goes, once ruchi is there, then attachment and bhav and prem, then you love ice cream. I mean, it comes very fast. So if you have ruchi for nam, then things go very fast. So we have to, this elimination program is absolute urgency. We must eliminate it as fast as possible so then we can receive the gift of ruchi. So the verses of this chapter 4 of Bhajan Rahasyam, they are the guillotine verses. These are the guillotine verses that cut off, to liberate us from our attachments. Doom! Back to Godhead. Choom! Nadanam, chop! Sundaram, chop! Kavitam Sundaram, doom! Ooh, wow, that was a close call. Whew. You know. So it hurts. Progress is painful. No pain, no gain. No permission, no admission. So we want the admission into the eternal pastimes of the Lord, so we have to get permission from Namprabhu. And he's not accepting anyone who's carrying extra baggage. So we have to drop off all the baggage. So this verse is a cutting verse. This is the cutting edge, right? Hare Krishna.